From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on this morning's Forum program, we'll look first at a report put out by the Center for Public Integrity, which grades states on government accountability and transparency, and we'll look at how California measures up to other states. Then in the bottom half of the hour, we turn our attention to a major wind farm proposal in the coastal city of Morro Bay, which already has advocates and critics lined up on opposite sides, and we'll take up the debate. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A new report from the Center for Public Integrity gives all 50 states low marks for government transparency and accountability. And at a C-, California received the country's second highest score on a range of variables that measure the state's abilities to prevent and expose corruption. We're joined to discuss a report on the state's record on governmental accountability in this opening Forum segment with the author of the California portion of the report, Ron Gunnison, and Marisa Lagos, reporter with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And welcome, Marisa.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you, and welcome, Ron.
Rob, thank you. Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Ron, let me begin with you. Public access, with the exception perhaps of Iowa, seems to be pretty bad across the board. But here in California, this was what brought down sort of the level of transparency and the high mark that could have been possible?
Yeah, that's one of two categories in which we got Fs. The other was judicial accountability. But the public access to information, we lose points because people who want to contest the refusal of the government to turn over information must go to court, which is expensive and time-consuming and limits the people just don't have the time or the resources to fight these decisions, so they give up and the state basically wins. So that's a pretty major problem, and Iowa had a bad score a couple of years ago, and they instituted a state government panel that resolves these disputes without the cost or the time-consuming problem of going to court.
Well, talking about court, one of the things that brought California down here also was judicial accountability, and there's really no state system to essentially evaluate, is there?
That's true. We don't. We have the only judges we evaluate publicly are appointees to the appellate courts or the Supreme Court, where there's the state bar and others look at their records. But for a superior court judges, and that's all the trial court judges in all the 58 counties, there's no public evaluation system. Some states have them. Arizona has one, for instance. It's online. You can see the scores for the various judges. Los Angeles County Bar Association evaluates judges who are facing election, but that it's a very limited evaluation process.
Well, overall, this is not exactly an inflated grading scale when you think of the fact that Alaska got a C and California was in second place with a C-. There was only one other state on that scale, and it was Connecticut at a C-. Other than that, those three, everybody was D-plus or lower. Let's talk about what went wrong here in, or what went right here in California. I mean, there were 13 categories that you were judging by, and pensions and state budget process and lobbying disclosure all came out pretty well.
Yeah. I think people should remember that the state budget process and the state budget itself are different things. I mean, the Californians obviously had years of fiscal problems and red ink and so forth. But in comparison with other states, we have a very open process. All the information is available. All the meetings are public. We've pretty much gotten rid of the Big Five process, the governor and legislative leaders making decisions behind closed doors. So most everything's out in public, and we score very well on that. And on pension management, again, there are financial problems with pensions. However, the information that's available to the public is pretty extraordinary, and the registration process for people who lobby the state pension systems is pretty rigorous in comparison with a lot of states.
Again, Rob Gunnison is the author of the California section of the 2015 State Integrity Investigation with the Center for Public Integrity, and Marisa Lagos is a reporter with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. The strange thing about this report is, at least in terms of shedding more light on government accountability and the like, Marisa, is the fact that there's a new law that's limiting disclosure. I mean, we're talking about behest payments largely being less transparent because of Assembly Bill 1544.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things in here that we actually got decent grades on that I think, you know, when the rubber meets the road and you actually try to go get the information, it's more difficult than you'd think. Behested payments is one. I did a big investigation last month looking at the, and this is basically not campaign, you know, contributions where a politician just asks for money for their campaign. This is when politicians go out and say, I have this great charity in my district, AT&T or PG&E. Can I get some money from you for it? Now, they have to disclose those donations if they ask for them and they're over $5,000, but they don't have to, they have no limits on how much. And in the last couple of years, they have spiked from an average of around $8 or $9 million a year to in 2015, $28.2 million, excuse me. In part because of grants that were being given from state agencies at the behest of lawmakers to private industries. So say a solar company or a renewable energy company. And the governor just signed a bill that did away with that disclosure requirement. So now if I'm, say, a lawmaker from the Bay Area who wants to get money for a private business from the state, I don't have to say that I went to bat for them at all.
And these are the same businesses, essentially, and the same tribe, so to speak, that get money regularly.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It's sort of the usual suspects when you drill down on over the past, you know, 15, 20 years as these have been required to be disclosed. Yeah, it was the AT&T, the Chevrons, the PG&Es, the Indian gaming tribes, the same people we see as the top donors around campaign contributions.
Who will give to both parties.
Yeah, who do give to both parties. Yeah. It didn't include labor unions, interestingly. They do not do this sort of charitable giving the same way that corporations do. I also, you know, was interested in the fact that we got such a high score around lobbying disclosure. And you know, I think that is definitely something that California does okay. But, you know, we don't actually – there's – first of all, it's hard to figure out who's lobbying for what because you have to sort of dig through these reports. It's like campaign finance. You almost need like a PhD in Excel sheets to understand really and you know, synthesize this data. But also because unlike a lot of local governments, we don't actually require any disclosure around lobbying for contracts, so for public money. And we also don't require at the state level a lot of detail, you know, around how or what the lobbying entitles. So if you're lobbying on a bill and you're a private lobbyist who's registered with the state, you have to say, I went in on behalf of the California Teachers Association and lobbied, you know, in favor of this bill, or not even in favor. They just say on this bill. And so, you know, I think, again, for the public to really understand like who's at the table, it's a little more difficult than our disclosure laws sort of belie.
And Rob Gunnison, just checking on political pressure within agencies. I mean, a lot of this is done agency to agency, but in California and probably most places in the country, each state agency creates its own code of ethics. And consequently, what can be done about, well, just to take an obvious example, nepotism in terms of checking, accounting?
Yeah, that is almost impenetrable. Unless you have, you know, sources inside an agency who are going to tell you what's going on, it's very difficult to track. Years ago there were agencies like the Department of Corrections, guards at Folsom. I mean, they were all, not all, but many were, you know, related cousins, brothers-in-law, and so forth. It was just the nature of the beast, and there is no law against nepotism or cronyism in California. And it, as you said, it's basically up to each agency to regulate these things. And rooting it out is very difficult. After all, the governor's wife is practically his chief of staff. Family connections are all over the place.
And Marisa Lagos, again, is a reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, who's done a lot of really important work on this score that we're talking about here. I mean, state politics also has revolving doors. I mean, between government and private industry or private jobs and so forth. And where's the disclosure there?
Well, there isn't. I mean, there are some sort of limited rules. I mean, there's a 1-year ban on lawmakers, agency secretaries, top gubernatorial aides. when they leave the government, they're not allowed to lobby the branch of government they worked in for a year. But say if you're the legislative secretary for the governor and you leave, you can still go lobby the legislature, which was done in the past couple of years. And most staffers, you know, a lot of staffers in the legislature can come and go as they please. There's no limits on that. And, you know, I think that there's obviously always an argument on behalf of people who are experts in certain fields working in government or outside of government. But there's clearly access issues. When you worked for the governor or for a lawmaker and then turn around and lobby, you know, a lot of the same people, especially on the staff level, I think there's just an issue of access that, you know, your average Joe Schmo is not going to sort of get in with the chief of staff to somebody if they previously worked very closely with them.
Let's find out what you have to say. Our listeners, we're talking about California earning a C- for government transparency and accountability, but also about, well, good governance in general with respect to transparency and accountability. And we'd like to hear from you, hear your thoughts, and please feel free to join this conversation. Our toll-free number is available now. That number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so again, feel free to join us. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. We do want to hear from you. Again, a number of ways. You can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking with Marisa Lagos, again, who is a reporter with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And Rob Gunnison is with us from Sacramento, author of the California section of the 2015 State Integrity Investigation with the Center for Public Integrity. Interested to hear what you, our listeners, have to say. Here's a Facebook comment from Noe, who says, there is no transparency or accountability for all the state public works projects, Bay Bridge, high-speed rail, et cetera. And those are just the programs they can't easily hide. Marisa?
Well, I think this gets to, again, what is accessible and what is available. And, you know, access is not the same as availability. I mean, one of the things the governor said when he vetoed AB 1544, that sort of limited behested payment disclosure, was, you know, well, this information is available at the agency level. If you go to the Coastal Commission or the Energy Commission and see the money they're handing out, you could see that maybe an assembly member gave a letter in support of a certain project. But that takes a lot of work. And so I think the issue really is, you know, Caltrans does have public meetings, of course. There's reams and reams of paper around the Bay Bridge project. But, you know, it takes, I think, a lot of the media, quite frankly, not to give ourselves too much credit, but a lot of times to really do the digging. And so, you know, it's sort of the fox is guarding the hen house in a way. The people that make and sign or veto these laws are the same people that are impacted by them. And, you know, we have a governor who I think has been good on a lot of issues, but has been pretty hostile to ethics reforms, including the bill he just signed. And he vetoed another bill, AB 10, that would have sort of narrowed the disclosure requirements around statements of economic interest. That's when government officials are asked, how much do you have in stocks and bonds or property interest? And right now the ranges are incredibly
wide. Range. Yeah. Now, how do you account for that in terms of the governor's actions? Any guess, any estimation as what is motivating him?
I mean,
he's always been, you know, pretty much at least publicly a man concerned about public official concerned about good government and clean government.
I mean, I would guess, and I think this, you know, it's the same as the things you might say on the presidential trail, and then it's different when you're in the situation room and in the White House. You know, I think that when it comes down to it, there's a belief that, you know, we're doing the right thing and that maybe this is onerous or unnecessary. And I mean, you saw this, you've seen this around the PUC stuff. We just had the governor veto an entire package of bills that would have tried to bring some real sunshine into the process there, where a lot of these ethics laws do not extend. I mean, around open meetings and other things. And I think that there's maybe a little bit of a paternalistic view. We're doing a good job. You guys, this is too much.
Rob, let me go to you on this, and then I'm going to go to our callers. Reed, one of our listeners, writes on our website, a friend of mine put in a request to California's Department of Industrial Relations because the website says the data about labor issues is open and available to the public. First request was made 2 years ago. The DIR bureaucrats ignored the initial request and every subsequent request for the exact same information. I believe there have been a total of 8 requests. They keep passing it to a different person. Is that red tape and bureaucracy, or is that just, again, lack of accountability?
Or both.
Or both,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's you know, public record, I've noticed in the past decade or so that the requirement of departments asking for written public records requests has grown exponentially. In doing this project, I had to request just about everything in a letter, and I've been working in Sacramento for almost 40 years, and you used to be able to just walk in and say, can I see the file and such, and they'd give it to you. And now everything is a letter, a request. It's much more difficult. And I think members of the public who don't have a lot of resources or time to chase these things down or go to somebody and sort of get in their face about it, it's a serious problem. And there's no real penalty for them. Nobody's going to go to jail for not answering that letter.
Maybe. Why has it become more difficult? I mean, and why has there been so much more red tape? Can you account for it?
Well, because the law permits it. You know, you can the agency can say we want to see this in a letter. They want to cover. You know, they're bureaucrats. They want to protect themselves. There's just a general reluctance to give stuff out. They've been burned, they think, and they don't want to. There's no percentage in being compliant. If maybe you'll go away. You know, maybe the reporter will go away. Maybe this requester will go away. Mm-hmm. I don't know what all their motivations are, it's much more difficult than it used to be.
Well, let me go to our callers, and we begin, Ken, with you. Join us on Forum, Ken. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I think one of the things that I'm interested in your analysis on is, as a lawyer, we often get judges asking lawyers for contributions for their kids' fundraising for a trip overseas or Girl Scout cookies. And those things, I think, never get disclosed, but it's sort of an inside baseball connection where you get basically a relationship, as your speaker now, access to judges without them ever having to disclose anything. And I think a lot of the public, as a lawyer myself, are unaware of this happening in our judicial forum, especially in the relationship gets built by judges asking for, you know, hey, my child is planning this trip to Europe, part of a school activity, and they're looking for contribution. And so it's a direct contribution to the student per se and wouldn't be subject to any disclosure. And I think that sometimes affects the public's access or view of the judiciary that most people don't understand.
Yeah.
Or don't know.
Marisa,
yeah.
That's a tough one.
No, I mean, that's a really interesting one. I haven't heard that specifically. But I think, you know, the other thing is that even at the lawmaker or governor level, unless you're a lobbyist, gift limits are around $250 a year. So, you know, you could give somebody a pretty generous gift and still not have to disclose it. But I think that's exactly sort of the point that Rob's reporting and what we've done is getting at, is that a lot of this isn't like this quid pro quo thing. It's just the access that you gain by wining and dining people or, you know, having these relationships that are a little more subtle.
Rob?
There is a Commission on Judicial Performance, which is a highly regarded agency nationally and internationally in California. You know, if there's a pattern of a judge doing that kind of thing, you know, a letter to that commission is probably in order. Maybe they get a letter of reprimand, or if it's really egregious, much harsher punishment. So there is an outlet.
There is recourse, yeah. Let me bring another caller on. John, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael. I'm so glad that you are doing this program. It's very, very important, and I'm so happy to hear about this report. Over the last 10 years or so, I have made a number of requests on a federal, state, and local level for records, and it's like running the gauntlet. You have to be very, very persistent and do not expect to be told the truth in the beginning or even at the end. And the problem, as your guests have indicated, particularly at the federal and the state level, is if you're getting stiffed, you have to go to court, and the process, particularly for someone who is not an attorney, has not had any experience with the process, is very complicated and expensive, and you can run into very unsympathetic judges, particularly if they're Republicans, excuse me for that partisan viewpoint. However, on the local level, I have found that city agencies are more responsive to public records requests because we have a citizen agency called the Sunshine Task Force, which will hear disputes concerning those requests. And it's much more set for a layperson to go in and make his or her case and get a ruling. It's not always perfect, but it's much less expensive and more direct.
Well, John, good of you to give that information, and I thank you for the call. I appreciate hearing from you. I wanted to go to an email here from someone named Nils from Pleasant Hill, who writes, I appeal to the California Department of Education regarding a school giving out educational opportunities based on donations to the school. This is prohibited by state statute. The CDE denied my appeal. When I asked for a rationale, the response was that my request for reconsideration of the appeal was denied. When I explained that the request was for a rationale, not a reconsideration, I was told that the request for a rationale was considered a request for reconsideration. So how do I get beyond this kind of stonewalling?
Well, you probably hire a lawyer, although I got to say I had a very similar experience with the Department of Education when I did this story looking at contract lobbying and how there's no disclosure. I wanted to look into this Common Core contract that had been handed out to basically the incumbent contractor. It's a quarter of $1 billion over a number of years. And, you know, that's real money. I asked them for a bunch of communications around lobbying around this contract, and they said, that's really broad. Can you narrow the request? I narrowed the request, and aha, there were no responsive records. So you're not alone. Let's just say that.
And we go next to San Jose. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi. I went to a reunion, and I saw how many people had died, and I wanted to ask a statistical question, a vital statistics question about, you know, how to graph certain things. And I called up, you know, several state agencies and wanted to just ask a technical question, nothing to do with fiduciary issues. And I didn't even get a full sentence. We don't do that. And I was incredulous. You know, I didn't want to take that much time, and it was somewhat of an academic question, but who's more prepared than people who do nothing that in the state office? And didn't even get an answer at the federal level. It's
very
awful.
Frustrating. And Rob, let me get you to respond to this, because we're getting a lot of these kind of emails and website comments and so forth. I'm looking at one here. In fact, it says, the police commission in the hyper-liberal city of San Francisco permanently closed all of its records of police misconduct. I mean, this is coming at us from so many directions, and I'm wondering, are we just talking about really corruption here? Is that what this is about, a lot of it?
Well, and if you look at the California Public Records Act, which is in the government code, and you start going down it, the exceptions are numerous, and police investigations and investigations of police misconduct are a really tricky area, and the law enforcement unions have lobbied very strongly for protection in that area. So that's a really hard one. Ongoing investigations, very difficult. Personnel records, almost impossible.
Can we get your report online, the public integrity report?
Yeah, it's online.
It's online, and we'll try to post it on our website as well. I'm going to have to say goodbye. Rob Gunnison, thank you so much for being with us from the Center of Public Integrity. Marisa Lagos, thank you. KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. When we return, we're going to talk about wind power on the coast of California.